on Grandpa Sharpie's, written on what would have been his 93rd birthday, December 4th, 2023. In university, I became a proponent of using file folders to organize class notes. The notes were typed up on a Chromebook, printed out, and then tucked neatly into their course folders, alongside syllabi and readings. Essay work and art project ideas were scratched out on loose leaf and given working titles and page numbers before joining the cardboard folds. Primary school blue-hued folders dotted my desk at home, and I toted them with me on GO trains and across campuses. All folders were clearly labeled in block letters, written up in black Sharpie marker. Course name, course code, and calendar year. They sat in piles on my desk, organized chronologically by day of the week rather than alphabetically. It was more functional that way. I still use the same system to keep my workspace tidy today. My writing ideas are captured on loose leaf in 0.3mm black ink, block lettering used for the working titles in the center of the header, page number circled on the top right corner. Instead of primary school blue, I now use ecru-colored folders that my neighbors left behind when they moved back to France. I no longer need to organize my work by day of the week, so I keep the files in alphabetical piles. I still label the folders and block letters with black Sharpie, and one of those hand-me-down ecru folders needs some labeling. A dull panic sets in when I can't find my black Sharpie. My writing supplies are organized in a particular fashion, located in the top drawer of the left cabinet that supports my butcher's block desk. As I stare down at the Sharpie's empty spot amid the desk dividers made from repurposed product packaging, I think of my grandfather's Sharpies, which now live in the closet of my little writing room. They sleep in a dark brown plastic box that originally held family photographs. On the box is a wide strip of green painter's tape with "photos" written in black ink in my dad's hand and crossed out with red Sharpie. The tape now reads, "pencils, paper clips, slash pins," also in my dad's handwriting, also with red Sharpie. I go to the closet and open the box. Everything is held in place. There are small dividers that separate the items, along with a Ziploc baggie holding paper clips and, of course, the Sharpies. There are 5 in total. The first 4 are red, orange, brown, and purple, all fine point. And the last one is a big, fat black one. A beige rubber band bundles them together. Even though I know I could use one of these markers to label my folder, I can't bring myself to break the bundle, so I check the drawer once more. Moving around my improvised dividers, I easily locate and retrieve the backup Sharpie from its home amongst the other backup pens and 0.3mm black Pentel Energel ink refills. No need to use one of Grandpa's Sharpies. As the aftershocks of my grandfather's unexpected and tragic death slowed in both speed and amplitude, one by one, we, his family, filtered into his room at the new retirement home. "If you want to take something, write your name on this," my mom says, handing me green painter's tape. Walking through his small quarters, I see green tape with my cousin's initials on many of his items. Paintings, art prints, trinkets, furniture. The gravity of the situation causes my throat to drop into my stomach as I frantically scan the room for a keepsake. Which of my grandfather's possessions could I salvage from his death to keep my memories of him alive? Before my grandparents' downsizing journey took them to what would become my grandfather's final home, they lived for over a decade in Swan Lake, a gated retirement community north of Toronto. Their corner lot house was big, bright, and beautiful. In addition to 2 full bedrooms and 3 baths, there was a loft that served as my grandfather's office for his contract work, which continued well into his 80s, and a finished basement. There were many things to love about that house, but my favorite was his workshop. This is how I remember it. My grandfather's workshop was behind the first door on the left after descending the basement stairs. The shop itself was unfinished, but felt warm and lived in. It had a fridge and a fridge-sized freezer, poppin' beer in one, meats in the other, and the walls were lined with shelves and drawers and bins and baskets and tools and crafting equipment. In the center of the room was his workstation. Even though I didn't usually drink pop, I would opt for carbonation when we visited, just so that I could go into the workshop to escape the noise of large family gatherings, and to take in his dedication to organization. Everything in his workshop was sorted, categorized, and labeled with as much attention to detail as possible. Screws of all types and sizes were neatly separated and tucked away into little pull-out drawers. The same was true for nails, washers, nuts, bolts, dowels, balsa wood, hobby paints, paper, paper clips, paintbrushes, popsicle sticks, googly eyes, pipe cleaners, glitter, and more things that I wish I could recall. It was his last workshop and the final place he created over 20 ornaments for his family each Christmas, all handmade by him since Christmas 1990. Sometime in the 2010s, when my grandparents began their downsizing journey, my aunts and uncles took over crafting duties. Grandpa's workshop was one of my favorite places to be in the chaos of Sholin family Christmas. It was a calm, quiet, and orderly refuge. It was a place to be with Grandpa, even when he was spending time with his 6 children and the other 14 grandkids. It was a place where I could connect with Grandpa in a distant way, appreciating our shared love of systems and order. Everything in its right place, everything easy to locate in emergency situations, like a googly eye falling off a reindeer ornament, for instance. One of the final Christmases at Swan Lake, my mom and I went up to help the grandparents set up for Christmas dinner. Grandma got me a cup of tea, and Grandpa put me to work at the dining table. My job was tracing the outline of a Christmas tree-shaped porcelain wall decoration onto a piece of felt in a shade of evergreen. The felt acted as a protective mat between the decoration and the wall, Grandpa explained. He instructed me to cut the shape out after I'd finished tracing it, and to report back to him when the job was complete. I set about my work, grabbing the felt and placing the piece of porcelain onto its surface. Then I took his black Sharpie and began tracing the outline of the flat Christmas tree. It was a simple task, really. Within seconds of the Sharpie making contact with the felt, Grandpa appeared, ready to supervise my work. He was unimpressed. There I was, a 20-something university student, doing a preschooler's work, and standing over me was my grandpa, an 80-something Dutchman, micromanaging me and critiquing my outline. He wasn't scolding or chastising, but he was serious and muttered something about finding me another easier task. He took the Sharpie from my hand, flipped over the felt, and started to trace the tree himself. I laughed because it was such a grandpa thing to do. He valued detail, exactness, and precision, even when tracing a Christmas tree decoration with a Sharpie. While my mom searches my grandpa's closet for a specific shirt, a graphic tee that my brother and I gave him for what would be his last Christmas, which read, "If Grandpa can't fix it, then no one can," I approach and open, gingerly and with reference, nearly every drawer in his room. What the drawers lacked in clothing, they made up for in workshop-adjacent materials. My heart wants to put that green tape on these small supplies, but my brain doesn't think that it's possible to have them. There's a part of me that judges my desire to take them as totems of my grandfather. That judging part lays into me. Your grandfather just died and you want to take a box of paper clips, some erasers, pencils? These are worthless since you won't actually use them. Find something else to take. I close my tear ducts as I close the drawer, shuffle out to the living space, and write my name in black Sharpie on the green painter's tape. I rip the piece of tape from the roll and place it on a print of the moon that I've always loved. When I return to his room to get my mom, I see his red and black mesh medical bag, identifiably his due to the keychain. Big black block letters sit on white cubic beads to spell out Ed Scholin. I'm immediately enamored and humbled. I tell my mom that if no one else wants the keychain, I'll take it. It feels like the right thing to ask for. A practical item. Something I'll see and use nearly every day to remind myself of him. I don't tell anyone about how much I wanted those small boxes of old workshop materials except for my husband, who doesn't understand why I couldn't bring myself to ask them, no matter how many times I tried to explain. He's right, though. It doesn't make sense. As days pass, my thoughts return again and again to those small boxes. The regret of not asking engulfs me, and I hope that no one else wants the keychain. About a week later, my dad messages me with a photo of Grandpa's red and black mesh medical bag, the keychain clearly visible. Dad, a gift from Grandpa. Dad, Mom and I grabbed it when we cleared out his unit this morning. Me, did you guys take any of his little labeled boxes? Dad, not sure what else Mom grabbed. After several emotionally fraught minutes, my dad messages me again. Dad, got a couple of little boxes. My heart migrates to my throat, and those shut tight tear ducts start to open. Me, would it be possible to have one, please? I was telling Justin the other night that I regretted not putting my name on one. Dad sends a photo of the boxes. You can have as many as you want. The tear duct dam breaks, and I thrust my phone into Justin's hands so that he can understand my latest emotional outburst. Those small boxes hold my big feelings. When I next see my parents, my mom shows me where they've stored my grandfather's things. I locate the medical bag and slip the keychain off a fabric loop. When I open the bag, I see his blue pedometer. Grandpa loved to go on long walks with Grandma, and a slip of paper with his name on it. I pocket those too. His small plastic boxes are on the desk beside the medical bag, and it's now time to decide which one to take. I choose the brown one and take it downstairs carefully to stash in my backpack. When I get home, I immediately take it into my writing room and place it safely in my closet, creating a space between the empty file folders, binders, and notebooks. That box, filled with pushpins and paper clips and pencils and erasers and sharpeners, along with his keychain, are my true totems of Grandpa. They are the mundane treasures of his extraordinary life. The box is now out on my desk with his Sharpies, pedometers, and name card. I've tucked the prayer card from his funeral service into the frame of a watercolor print of a raven. Now both of those West Coast creatures are perched above my desk, keeping watch over me while I work. In a way, he's still supervising me. I need to make sure I'm as detailed, exact, and precise in my work so that he doesn't snatch the Sharpie out of my hand from beyond the grave. I am grateful for the intangible keepsakes of my grandfather, the memories of his secret Christmas crafts, his workshop filled with wonder, and a genetic predisposition for engineering organizational systems. And I am grateful for the tangible as well. His keychain will stay on my sunflower lanyard, his pedometer will stay at 750 steps, and yes, the Sharpies too will stay bundled up, at least for the time being. My grandfather left his marks on his family as indelible and permanent as the Sharpies he used to label his life. the Sharpies I keep in memory of him. Happy birthday, Grandpa. I hope you're tinkering away with a song in your heart and a beer in your hand. I did, however, use one of his paper clips to keep the loose leaf chicken scratch draft of this essay together. And if you're reading along with this audio, I apologize if I've moved words around, and there's no edits to this, so, you know, words might be not spelled properly and punctuation could be very awkward. I didn't get a chance to really edit this when I wrote it, but that's what happens when inspiration strikes. Okay, family, thanks for listening to me read this. It was hard seeing you all yesterday, but it was good seeing you all yesterday. Take care of yourselves. I love you.